Dean, why do you run? You've done all sorts of other things. You windsurfed, you surfed, you played volleyball. Why do you run? Why is that your passion?
You know, I've written 5 books and I'm not sure I've gotten to the answer yet. I mean, running is such a conflicted thing, right? It hurts. It's uncomfortable. It makes you miserable, but we all still love it. We strive for it. And I think there's a magic in misery. I think life is so comfortable that, you know, we're miserable. And we've learned that you're never happier. You're never more alive than when you're struggling and suffering. And running gives you that. I mean, it also tests you. I mean, there's a saying that you do not know if you're a hero or a coward unless there is war. Well, we have our war, right? Every time you're standing at that starting line, you've got a war in front of you, and you learn who you are through the way you respond.
Hey, we want to tell you about Janji and the cool running gear they have over there for both men and women.
Hey, Scott, don't bury the lead. There's 15% off if you use the code TRN15. And get this, we're giving 10 free pair of AFO shorts away in June. That's to our Patreon partners. But I got to tell you, I love the shirt that I'm wearing. It's well vented, and I think I look good in it. It stretches in every direction that I run.
Every direction? Or do you do a lot of pivoting out there on the trail?
Sometimes when my toe catches a rock, I can do anything. I look like a ballerina.
Janji makes great gear for both men and women. They come in a lot of different colors and patterns. They have tops, they have bottoms, they have outerwear, they have accessories. They just have it all.
And if you want to get it all, go to, where do they go, Scott? Where do they go?
Janji.com. But when you check out, use the code TRN15 and you get 15% off. We are also excited about our fueling company, UCAN. That's UCAN. You can find them at UCAN.co and you can get 20% off if you enter the code TRN20. I want to tell you about some of the stuff that I've been experimenting in my training. One is the energy powder. This is a super starch that gets into your gut. It dissolves quickly and it gives you power and energy all throughout the run. All I know is it works.
And all I know is if I get to eat an energy bar, I will actually run miles and miles just because I can and to eat another one. They're so good, Scott.
The other thing that I've been snacking on while I'm in my office, Don, is this stuff called the chocolate energy mix. It's kind of like a granola, but it has premium stuff like almonds, sunflower seeds, and everything. But it's powered with that superstarch, that same superstarch that's in the power.
Scott, because it's so super, you don't need to munch on it that much. A little bit goes a long ways.
And you can get 20% off if you go to ucan.co and type in the code TRN20 at checkout. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And today we are with another pal. We haven't had this gentleman on since 2017. This is Dean Karnassus. And he has a new book out. And we invited him on after we read this great book. And we're going to have a fun conversation with him.
You know, many of us have been influenced in some way by Dean Karnassus, whether they're runners or non-runners alike. You know, we all have our story, our kind of our Dean story. And as I started writing mine down, I realized I have a lot of Dean stories that I've picked up along the way. And my first experience with Dean was at some early 2000-ish AR50, American River 50 mile race here in Northern California. He was the guest star there. And you walked in and you saw a big cutout of Dean Karnassus. And that was my first experience listening to him on that great spaghetti feed dinner that we used to do before races. Another story I heard about Dean along the way, picking these up, he ran a race in Napa, a Napa marathon. He lived in San Francisco and he ran from home to the race and then ran the race with a decent time. Another story I heard, and you can verify any of these or just leave them out there as lore if you'd like, that in the race, a Ragnar race that usually has like five or seven people pile in a van and hand off the baton along this 200-mile journey, Dean ran the race by himself. And these are the things that I heard, not even know if they're true. They're just kind of things that you picked up along the way. And then, of course, he's on David Letterman. He talks about folding a pizza and ordering it along the way. We all shared that story. And then I finally got to see him. I'm at 2005 Western States pinning my bib on. No way. He didn't see me, but I knew exactly who he was. I go, man, that's Dean Karnazes. Here he is.
And that's the last time he saw Dean after the starting gun went off, because Dean was ahead of him.
Along these stories, we ended up with him on the podcast, got a chance to meet him some years back and said, wow, he's a real human. He talks to us. He's one of us. And then I hear from a good friend of mine, one of the races that Dean features in this book that we've read was the Western States, the last one that he ran. And our friend ran it as well. And he was a pacer. And he said, I shared 20 miles with Dean Karnazes, and what a nice guy. He's really a solid trail runner, one of us. And I really got a chance to get to know the man, and which started making me think as I read the book, somewhere along the line, Dean's got a bad rap. Some people have opinions of him that sometimes not real positive, and I can't understand why. But every once in a while on a social media comment, you hear Dean has influenced things in a negative way, but I don't understand why that's happened. And here we are with Dean. We asked permission to ask this question, and he said he's happy to explore it. So Dean, welcome to the podcast. But what do you think this is, Dean? Why do you think that sometimes you get a tough rap?
You know, I think I've stuck my head above the cubicle, if you will, in a way. And you know, I think you kind of, to me, explained in 2005 kind of this person that was larger than life. I mean, you went into the pasta feed, and it was with Greg Sutherland. I'll never forget mm-hmm. the late friend of mine, ours, Greg Sutherland. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you see this guy that like has a best-selling book, and you see a cutout, you know, of me that's larger than life, and you kind of want to vomit. Like, okay, who is this guy? And the other thing is that, you know, a lot of people have said, well, you brought so much notoriety to ultra running that we can't get into races anymore. There's long lotteries. You know, I don't know. I guess I could live with that, but I'm not sure why I become kind of polarizing in that regard. I mean, I certainly have a lot of fans that are, you know, that I identify with, but some people I think, you know, they see me in a light that that others don't shine on me. I don't think they know the true Dean, and I think if they spend a day with me, they'd probably think differently.
Yeah, like our friend on the Western States Trail, he got a chance to know you and shed off some of the other negative that you hear. And if there's one negative comment and 1,000 good ones, all you hear is a negative. And so I think that's just something about social media. Some of the things that we hear, the thorns are, you know, are a bit more, they stick you more than the beauty of the rose itself. So I think as you may have thought, boy, Don, you sure took a long introduction here. You're not leaving room for Dean. That's one of the things that I did leave off of the comments that my bullet points was, yeah, you got a rap for making the trails crowded. Western States is tough to get in because of Dean Karnazes. It's crowded out here at the trailhead because of Dean. You got a lot of that.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, when I wrote my first book, honestly, I thought if I could sell 5 copies, I'd be lucky. I didn't plan on it being such a, you know, an influential book. I mean, I just wanted to write a book. It was kind of a life goal of mine, like many people have, you know, to write a book, to go skydiving, you know, to try sushi, all these kind of things. And when it took off in popularity, I thought that was quite unexpected.
and
enjoy the ride, because this doesn't happen often, right?
And now we're 5 books in. This recent book is the 5th book. Is that right, Dean?
Yeah, if I'm doing my math right, it's my 5th book. Yeah. When I signed up for this interview, I was told there'd be no math.
the book is A Runner's High: My Life in Motion, and it was released. Don figured this out. I'm not too quick on the uptake. It's called A Runner's High, and it was released on April 20th, 4/20. Is that a coincidence, Dean, or are you playing with us?
No, I said that to my publisher, and he said, well, we traditionally launch our spring titles on the third Tuesday of April. That's when we always launch our spring books. And I said, do you know what day that corresponds with this in 2021? We had no idea. It was happenstance. Yeah.
Go ahead, Scott.
I said it's such a good book, and it starts out it paints this picture, and that's what I love about it is it takes you on a road down memory lane where Dean describes some races that he's in, and at first I'm going, this is fun, and then I started thinking, you know what, I did that, I've done that. I remember being in a situation like that, or I hope I don't want to be in a situation like that. It was really an enjoyable read.
Hey, and Scott, I absolutely agree with you. As I'm thumbing through this book, it occurred to me that everything that Dean is going through are things that we've gone through ourselves, such as, oh, I've got a race coming up. I'm not prepared. It's a short time off. So what I'll do is throw myself into the hardest 100K I could find to get ready for 100 mile. Why do we do that stuff, Dean? Why do we just do something crazy like that?
Because I think we all are collectively crazy as ultra marathoners. I think we're kindred. I think we're kindred spirits. I mean, I think we're willing to bite off more than we can chew and just see how things go, because that's what makes life interesting. And certainly, jumping into 100K when you're, with very little base, it's going to challenge you.
To put some context around this, Dean, this is how the book opens. Tell us what's going on to give us a little bit of background of this book.
Yeah, so the book opens, I'm flying through the air.
Free. That's right.
The tripping and flying wasn't the bad part. The bad part was the landing, which, when you fall during a race, it's always the landing that's going to get you. And it kind of, it's at a point in a 100K race. And I kind of reflect back from there about how did I get here and what am I doing here and can I keep going? So the book starts with flight.
And because you're a veteran, you figure out the most precarious place to put yourself in a race with elevation. It's at elevation that's super hot and dusty. And you purposely bring one water bottle when you know your experience tells you bring two bottles and maybe hang a hydration pack on your back. But you want to make sure that you're absolutely pushed to the end to accelerate your preparation for the 100-mile Western States run coming up in just a short time to get yourself in shape. Well done, Dean. Well done.
It was a hack. It was a hack job for sure.
Don't you think it's interesting that we do dumb stuff like that, even though we have the experience? And our experience, you would think that we would learn from our mistakes or from our experiences, but yet we still keep on making those mistakes. I consider myself a smart guy in some realms. Why do we do that, Dean?
I think it's a sense of adventure, kind of never stop exploring. That this journey into the unknown, just to see how things go.
I think it's a digging ourselves out of these spots. Like, can I manage it if I do this? And those are the things that I think intrigue us and motivate us about getting out there. I think we all do some of those things. We may take on a race and really not study the profile too much, just to make sure it's an absolute challenge. And I think it's curious that we all support that and we have that similarity.
Yeah, it's really intimidating. I mean, people think that I don't get intimidated or I don't get nervous, but standing at the start of a race, I'm nervous as hell. I'm looking around me at all these fit people thinking they're so dialed, like they know exactly what they're doing. They got their strategy. They've got the course profile memorized. But the reality is a lot of people don't. They're just as nervous as we are. They're thinking, what the hell am I doing here? I don't deserve to be here. And what's going to happen to me out there? And I think that's kind of exciting.
This race that Dean decided to sign up for is the Bishop's 100K. I think I got that right. And it's up at elevation. It has some massive climbs. It's dusty, like Don was saying. When you and this race is like many races have kind of evolved. they have other distances that are available, shorter distances, like a 20 miler, a 50K, a 50 miler for this race specifically. Why didn't you just say, let's go for the 50 miler? Why did you have to go for the 100K, Dean?
Because I'm the ultra marathon man.
Fifty miles is an ultra marathon.
People expect me just to do the longest, toughest race. It's like, this is what I do, and I guess I'm trying to be true to the reputation I have, even if it's not really me. But the interesting thing that I learned at this race, and now I know it is a thing, is that you can downshift, you can trade down at any point and still get credit for the race finish. And it's very tempting, if you know, because let's face it, toward the end of an ultra marathon, who's not completely baked? who's, you know, given a choice, hey, it's an easy downhill mile and a half to the finish, or it's, you know, another half marathon, you know, into hell, who's not going to take the former, right? But I don't know if you guys have done a race where they let you mid-race decide, I'm going to choose a shorter distance, but I think that's now kind of commonplace in some races.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because whether they have that option at a race or not, there is that option at the aid station many times just to cut the band and to be done. That could be your last step into the aid station. That could be it. And all the hardship and suffering that you know is in front of you could be gone. And so that makes me think to myself, what really pushes us? What's inside of us when comfort is waiting for us, when end of fatigue is there, but we still press on, we still walk on that blister, we still deal with that cramp that's waiting for us? What inside of us says, no, keep going, do more? And really, what does it mean? You know, you're the only one that cares about your time. You're the only one that knows that you finished or not. But we still, inside of us, we have this desire to go ahead and confront that beast out there the rest of the race.
Yeah, and you know, and I always tell people, and this is more practical advice, never DNF at an aid station. Because if you've ever DNF'd before, you know what happens. You know, you just say to yourself, when I get to the aid station, I'm so over this. Like, when I get to the aid station, I'm done. And a lot of times, you know, then you get in the car and you start driving away, and an hour later, half an hour later, you think, boy, I feel better now. Like, I... why did I do that? So I always tell people, you know, get to the aid station, have some food, you know, chill out, and do not DNF at the aid station. Just force yourself to get out of the aid station. And inevitably what happens, you find your second gear, you know, once you get a mile or two away from the aid station, further down the trail, there's no way in hell you're going to turn around and go back.
You know, that's like the book states in a number of different places. You know, that's a life lesson right there. You know, about quitting and going through hardship. I think that there are lots of lessons that we can learn from that. You know, one thing that caught my eye, and I have highlighted in the book here, Dean, is at the end of the race, and spoiler alert, he finishes and does extremely well. I think you said that you got first place in your age category, and you got the medal. Can you tell us about what the medal or what the buckle said, and what you realized when you saw that buckle?
Yeah, so you know, to set the stage, you're right. There was a 20 at this race I did, which is the Bishop High Sierra Ultra. There was a 20 miler, a 50K, a 50 miler, and a 100K. So there are four concurrent races going off, and you'd think, you know, when you get to the finish, you'd get the big buckle for the 100K, but you know, the buckle you got, it was actually a medal. It had all the distances listed. So it didn't specify whether you'd run the 100K or the 20 miler. You just got the same medal. And I thought, you know, that's just so democratic. Everyone gets the same thing. And I think that's what I love about this sport, is, you know, that we're all equal, that we're, you know, some people I'm sure struggled just as much as I did to finish the 20 miler, even though I was running 100K, we both had our trials and tribulations, you know, we both slayed our demons, and I think they're just as deserving of that medal, that, you know, as I was.
There may have even been a 20 miler or a 50K person that was still out on the trail after you finished the 100K that was probably, you know, just pushing their envelope further than what they thought they could do. So I love that this community is democratic in that way. I love that part.
There's a lot of great quotes that you have in there, Dean, and one of them is, and I subscribe to it, and I love the theory of it, is that the best race run isn't always the winner of the race. Somebody else may have executed perfectly and ran a better race. Can we kind of speak to that about kind of the ethos and the thought of that and how our community thinks of racing like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think just with running in general, we think of the best runner as the fastest runner, right? We take the mm-hmm. two as synonymous. You know, when you think of who's the best runner, you're automatically thinking, okay, who's winning the races? Who's got the fastest times? But sometimes I don't think the fastest runner is necessarily the best runner. Yeah, they're the fastest, but there are people that so thoroughly enjoy ultramarathoning. I mean, you get to see the love of the sport and the love of the pursuit the whole time they're out there doing it. And to me, those folks are really the true best runners. I mean, I used a quote from a guy that I used to admire when I was a surfer. And he said, you know, the best surfer is the one who's having the most fun. And that's how he put it. And I kind of believe that. I subscribe to that with ultramarathoning.
You know, Dean, your resume shows a victory at Badwater and just top 10 finishes at Western States and a lot of success out there. But as you reflect back, would you think that one of your favorite or best runs ended up with a trophy, or was it just one that you overcame the biggest demon, or where would you classify your best run?
Yeah, no, I think it was I would say going back to Badwater after my first attempt. So the Badwater Ultramarathon is 135-mile foot race across Death Valley. And you guys know.
Keep thankful for reminding.
Yeah, we're the thumb up. Okay, was thanks for explaining.
Yeah, we're supposed to do that. We've been told we need to do that kind of stuff. So thanks for doing our job. Go ahead.
Yeah. So you know, this race has been coined the world's toughest foot race. And the first time I attempted Badwater, it ended horribly. You know, it ended up me passing out on the roadside and being driven to safety. And you know, a lot of people would say, "Well, you're lucky to be alive. Like that could have killed you out there." And the only thing I thought for 1 year is finishing the race. I mean, it occupied every moment of my existence is I got to go back there and finish it. I got to do this. And I think when I went back and finished the next year, that was probably salvation. And it proved to me that I was better than I thought I was, and I could go further than I thought I could.
Dean, why do you run? You've done all sorts of other things. You windsurfed, you surfed, you played volleyball. Why do you run? Why is that your passion?
You know, I've written 5 books. And I'm not sure I've gotten to the answer yet. I mean, running is such a conflicted thing, right? It hurts. It's uncomfortable. It makes you miserable, but we all still love it. We strive for it. And I think there's a magic in misery. I think life is so comfortable that you know, we're miserable. And we've learned that you're never happier, you're never more alive than when you're struggling and suffering. And running gives you that. I mean, it also tests you. I mean, there's a saying that you do not know if you're a hero or a coward unless there is war. Well, we have our war, right? Every time you're standing at that starting line, you've got a war in front of you, and you learn who you are through the way you respond.
Have you seen yourself evolve as a runner or as a person through these challenges?
I've seen myself get slower.
Well, yeah. That's next question. And we can all participate in that. But have you seen some of these qualities that develop through these struggles? Have you watched it, Dean, become a better person?
I think without a doubt. I think anyone that's run a marathon or ultra marathon is a better person because of the experience. I mean, you know, when you cross that finish line, you are a different person than the one that was starting at the starting line. I mean, you're changed by the experience, and I think we have an intimate understanding of who we are. You know, I'm Greek, and the Oracle at Delphi, you know, said, "Know thyself." And I think the only way you can really know thyself is to push thyself. right? I mean, you don't learn about yourself unless you're way out of your comfort zone. And ultra marathoning, you know, gives us that arena to explore.
Do you have to race? When I say do you have to, I'm meaning does Dean have to race? Do you have to have a race to test yourself? Or, you know, there's a lot of space in between these races where we go out and train. But does Dean have to race?
No, I love to wander. I mean, I love nothing more than put on a hydration pack, you know, stick a credit card in there, a cell phone, and be gone for a day or two. I live for that. Yeah. I absolutely live for that. And I do probably as much of that as I do racing.
And now a quick break from our discussion with Dean Karnazes to talk about BOA. And many people might be saying, what is BOA? Scott, what is BOA?
BOA is a company. They partner with leading brands to make the best gear even better. The BOA Fit System, what that is a lacing system for shoes, trail running shoes, that has a little dial. It has a micro-adjusting dial. It's super strong, lightweight laces, and low-friction guides.
And let me translate that. That means better fit, better performance, less blisters, and more fun. That's what it means to me.
And here's what we have for you, Nation members. BOA is going to be giving away 10 pair of the new La Sportiva Cyclone shoes. These are brand new shoes that La Sportiva has manufactured with the BOA Fit system. We're going to be giving away 10 pair of those on July 16th. This is how you get your free pair. To register, go to boafit.com/TRN. That's boafit.com/TRN.
Get yourself a free pair. And now back to the show with Dean Karnazes.
I want to dive into that a little bit. You tell your wife, you know, it's Thursday. Hey, honey, I'm going for a walkabout, and you put your hydration pack on, your cell phone, credit card, and you just leave without any plans. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it started when I was living in San Francisco, and I was, you know, training for, you know, 100 milers, and I would leave. I'd tuck the kids into bed. So this was when my kids were younger. I tuck them into bed and read them a story. And then about 8 o'clock at night, I'd head out and I'd run up to Napa Valley. And the route I followed was 100 miles. I knew it was 100 miles. Mm-hmm. And my wife would get the kids up in the morning on Saturday morning and drive up and meet me. And then we'd spend the weekend together up there hanging out and having fun.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, one of the things that I texted to Scott in preparation here is I said, you've got to read page 94 and a half through
99.
And that's in the book. And it talks about the runner's form of escapism and how important that is and how that's a real unique benefit of being a runner. And I think all humans need some type of escapism, and some do it at the betting track, and some do it through a bottle, and some do it through, you know, other means. But tell us about escapism and how that's part of the benefit of running for you.
Yeah, and probably like you guys, I have a really good relationship with nature. I mean, I'm more comfortable out in nature by myself than I am in groups of people. And I think a lot of humans these days... unfortunately, don't have any relationship with nature. I mean, so many people, you know, get in their air-conditioned car, you know, they go to their air-conditioned office, or they used to before COVID, you know, they really never really, you know, their relationship with nature might be a walk, you know, around the block or going to a local park, but we really immerse ourselves in nature. And I think, to me, escaping into nature is how I revive myself. It's kind of a renewal. It's almost like a rebirth. And to me, that's really healthy. And if you look at other people that I admire, you know, you look at Thoreau or some great writers, they all had a really strong relationship with nature.
You know, I've run the trails and think just parallel to this trail is highway. You put your number in there. And I think how many people are on this paved road that have no idea that just 2 or 3 or 4 miles over, there's this. It's absolutely, you know, 100% unique and different from the rat race they're in. And here I'm in solitude, just enjoying this as many other generations before me. It's really a unique experience and place that that I think is important for us to discover and commune with.
Yeah, I think it's fundamental to being human. Mm-hmm. You know, it's where we came from, but modern society is so different than the place we came from.
In those few pages that Don mentioned, there's another part where that I really related. And you said there's untold, I'm paraphrasing, of course, there's untold times where you just had the weight of the shoulder, the weight of the world on your shoulders, and you put on some running shoes and you head out the door. And within 5 or 6 miles, that pressure on the shoulders lifts and you get a better perspective of life. And you may have even solved some of the issues that you were worried about. Don and I used to, when we ran together quite a bit, before he decided to leave me and move to another part of the state, we used to really have great, earth-shattering, life-changing, world-changing conversations on the trail. Why do you suppose that happens? And can it happen somewhere else? Or is it just the trail? Is there some magic?
Well, I think, you know, motion stirs emotion. So I think when we're moving, you know, I've tried meditating by sitting still. I can't get there. I can only meditate when I'm moving.
Interesting.
And it sounds like you guys are the same way. And as well as, you know, when do you really have an honest conversation with someone? You know, in an artificial setting, it just doesn't feel natural. But when you're out running somewhere, especially in nature, it just feels like you can be honest and upfront and really communicate on a different level than we are right now, you know, with our headsets on and in front of a computer.
And you can have that discussion, that honest discussion, on a solo run, can't you?
With yourself.
With yourself, right.
I think those are the most, and I think that's where we work through a lot of issues and we learn, you know, deeper truths about ourselves. And I think that's, you know, I prefer to run solo. I certainly miss group runs right now, and I certainly miss, you know, being in competition with, you know, other people on the trails, but I still really enjoy the solo run.
I think one of the things that attracted me to the book are all these little nuggets that you discover along the way where you speak your truth and we realize that, wait a minute, that's my truth too. And I think that's why when we get out on trails as groups and as community members that, and we've said it before, the trail qualifies us. It boots out those that don't belong and embraces those or encourages those that do belong to become better people. And I think that's why, as all these cliques develop, whether you're you're out there mountain climbing or mountain bike riding or quilting, your community links together and becomes a safe place to communicate because you have so many similarities. And I think that's why it's easy to have those conversations with a trail brother or sister.
Yeah, and out of curiosity, how did you guys meet?
A runner brought us together and said, "Hey, you need to come out and run," and we said yes, which led us to this.
We knew each other but we weren't friends until we started spending time on the trail, for sure. Do you have friends like that, Dean? You cherish every minute on the trail. We're going for a run tomorrow, by the way, Dean. Don's coming back over to Auburn, and we're going to go for a run. And I tell you, I've been looking forward to it all week. Do you have friends like that?
I do, and most of them I met on the trail. Ironically, yeah, I met them somewhere running.
Well, the book is called A Runner's High. I would highly recommend it. Don, tell them a little story about this book. Tell the audience about. I'll preface this.
Yeah, Don, give me another hint.
Don and I have done a lot of podcasts with authors of books.
Oh,
and I don't think Don has finished any of them. Usually he gets through to the table of contents. He may read the first chapter and the last chapter, but I don't think that he has ever finished one of the books. Tell us about this book.
Yeah, that thump you just heard was me being under the bus. Thank you, Scott, for that. I thought I've pulled it off pretty well over the years, but this particular book, I opened it up thinking maybe I'd do the same thing. You know, I'd read some highlights, and I started reading chapter one, and it just kept pulling me in and pulling me in, and next thing you know, it's half done, and I just keep reading it, and throwing some texts over to Scott. Hey, look at this quote. I really enjoyed this book, Dean. It's well written, and I read somewhere on a review that it was a love letter to the trail or to ultra running, and I really think it is. It's a love letter we can all subscribe to, because so much of it is just to the ethos of the trail and the reason we love the trail, and we'll find ourselves in each one of your predicaments, except like going through the White House. So we don't all get to do that, but it's a good book that I couldn't put down.
Well, I think I put into words what all of us have felt, all us trail runners and ultra marathoners have felt. I just put it into words. And I think most people are just reading it, nodding their head. Like, I've been there. I know that feeling. And it's very unique to our experience, our collective experience.
Yeah, I think that's where I found the magic of this book is saying, coming into an aid station and not being able to communicate to the aid station workers what you want because your mouth is so dry. I mean, that picture that you painted in there, you know, I was just going, I've been there. I know what that's like. And I also know what it's like to have a quesadilla made by an aid station worker that tastes better than any Michelin-ranked restaurant there is in the world. We relate, and that makes us brothers on the trail.
I'm going to add to Scott's, or to be sitting down in the dirt and having aid station workers look over it, and you think, how am I going to pull this off so I don't look like I'm done for? I've been there.
I think to Scott's point, there's a quote in the book, misery loves cutlery. So thank God for those people making quesadillas trail side.
Oh, gosh.
They don't get much better.
Hey, I'm curious. Is the book out on audio, an audio version yet? And are you the narrator?
It is on audio. And unfortunately, I couldn't narrate because it was right during the thick of COVID. Uh-huh. And all the recording studios were closed. So some of the professional readers, they have studios in their house. Uh-huh. So I assigned it to a guy. Yeah.
I've heard from one of our other friends that's a writer. He said that he narrated one of his books, and he said it was harder than running an ultramarathon. He will never do it again.
I concur with him because I've read a couple of my books. It's horrible. it's absolutely horrible. Yeah.
Dean, we appreciate you coming on and sharing this with us, some of your thoughts from the author himself. I enjoyed it. I know that others, if they pick it up, will enjoy it because, you know, I think it's a way to get to look into our sport and make sure that we feel that others are experiencing the same thing we are. And it turns out we're all alike. We all have similar experiences. And no matter who you are, whether you're standing on top of a podium or just trying to get it done, we all suffer the same pains and we all have the same questions in our head. And it's nice to join you in your head to find out what's going on in your world when you tackle these races.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a quote in there to the effect that, you know, running an ultramarathon is simple. All you have to do is not stop.
And so if you haven't smiled, you know, in the last couple days, get this book and read it because you're going to smile because it relates to your experiences as well. We thank you, Dean, for a well-written book and just a fun experience going through and reading it.
Well, I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. And I appreciate all the kind things you've said. And I just hope we can run together one day. I wish I could come up to Auburn tomorrow to join you both.
You can. Yeah. It's called a car. Actually, for Dean Karnazes, it's just put on your shoes and run over here tonight. And we're starting our run at noon. So you could still join us.
If I started now, I might be able to make it. But you're right. I don't have a car. Like I haven't had a car for 10 years. And people think it's crazy. But I don't want a car.
Good for you. Good for you. We'll go out and run.
Mas. We'd like to thank our Patreon supporters for helping make this possible. We appreciate their contributions and hope they're getting ready for the Cocopelli 1000.
Do we have more information about the Cocopelli Run 1000?
It's 1,000. It's 1,000 miles.
Or kilometers. We'd also like to especially thank our Patreon business supporter, Doug Crumley with Crumley & Associates. He's part of our nation. He's a runner, and he loves to help people perform at their best. Crumley & Associates can be found at DougCrumleyJr.com. They're a private wealth advisor service that is part of the Ameriprise Financial Services LLC.
Hey, TRN is produced by Doug Mayer and his dog, Izzy, and hosted by two hacks, Scott, you and I.